So, we're a little sparse compared to the first day or two, but I guess that happens. So lecture 5, February 1st, 2022. Lecture note page should be 58. Happy Lunar New Year. Sometimes we see Happy Chinese New Year, but of course, other people than the Chinese do celebrate the lunar calendar. So whether you're celebrating Chinese New Year or whether you're celebrating Lunar New Year, it's the year of the tiger. And so for the moment, my squirrel icon is a tiger, and it's reminding me to remember to record the slides. I think I've done that. I know you don't care, but I'd like to know how many people we have working. So 155 in here. Hi, web students, 459 of you, so 614 overall. So just, you've heard this horror storm that's coming towards us. If you haven't, here's the news. And if it hits us, no surprise to you, because we did it on day one, but for day 6, I will record and make it available online. So let's hear from a quick student organization, Pi Sigma Epsilon, the Zeta Chi chapter. Take it away, folks. Make sure your mic is on. And oh, you might need the clicker too. Clicker? And your green light on. Let's see. Yeah, they should hear you.
Hello? All right, perfect. Oh, yeah. All right, my name is Matthew Duffy. I'm the VP of HR for Pi Sigma Epsilon Zeta Xi. We are our,
My name is Matt Brown. I'm the Vice President of Administration.
My name is Angelina DeCola. I am VP of Marketing for PSE.
So we are a national co-ed fraternity. We're open to all majors. Our chapter meetings are from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Tuesdays. And we are also a partner with Zanes Incorporated. They are an organization that brings awareness to children and adults with special needs. So we do, that's our philanthropy, and we do events with them, volunteer events and social events.
So why you should join PSE? We have a lot of different leadership roles, as we stated ours before. VP of Marketing, which I hold the position of, we have a lot of different fundraising and social events that you can be a part of that I organize. You can get involved in leadership roles. You can be a director, you can be on the VP board, or you can even become the president. Volunteer opportunities and social events, like I said, I will be organizing those. Some things we've done in the past is Top Golf, headshots where you can take a picture of your face with like professional wear on for your LinkedIn page or your resume or anything you want to use it for. Other socials we're going to be organizing is bowling, Cavs game. We're doing a lot of fun stuff this next semester. And along with volunteer opportunities, like he said, we work with Zane, so we're going to do a lot of different fundraisers for that. There's going to be a lot of different fun things to do. We have resume and interview workshops, so we're going to have a couple things where you can work on your interview skills and also upgrade your resume. And we have a lot of scholarships offered through PSE. And you can apply for those and definitely try to get those.
And then PSE is a great way to meet new companies and develop networks. So for instance, I'm only a sophomore and I already have an internship for this summer with Sherwin-Williams. So they came in and they took us to Top Golf, and I talked to the city manager. She convinced me to apply, and then I applied the next day and I got a phone call like very quickly to set up an interview. So it's really nice. You get to work on your interview skills. It was my first professional interview, so that's very helpful as well. So it's just a great way to meet new companies and develop those connections.
So here's also a look at our corporate sponsors, like we mentioned. There's some pretty big companies up there. Not all of them are up there. Such companies as like Smucker's, Sherwin-Williams, and a few others that aren't up there are also our partners, and they're always closely working with us to make sure that all of our members are able to get either internships while we're in college or long-term jobs outside of college. So they work really well with us, and they're always very attentive to us. So this QR code will lead you to a form that you can fill out your information so we can contact you with further details about recruitment, events coming up, and such stuff like that. Also, this is my name, Matthew Duffy. My phone number and my email, you guys can contact me for more information as well. And then you can also follow us on Instagram at Kent State PSE. And that's it. Thank you for your time.
Any questions? Thank you, Matt and company. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, so another student organization worth your consideration. I won't keep doing these, I don't think, but because it's old news at this point, but face coverings. Good for you, thank you. Because why do I want to be the face cover police? You know where not to sit because I like to wander up and down the best you can anyhow, thanks. Important dates, Mini Test 2 closes today. How many people have? How many people haven't? Please do, that counts for your attendance. I'll stop showing this as well, but you know now, by now, if you've done it, you know it's got a lockdown browser. You saw the note from me that says there's a glitch and how to fix the glitch if it asks you for an access code. You've seen that, hopefully. That's old because we haven't updated because we haven't finished it yet. That's old. If you see missing for the other test, the one you're not supposed to take, either standard or extended time, that's fine. If you see missing for the one you're supposed to take, then you missed it. That's a problem. All right, so business in the news. We can't get away from the pandemic-related stuff, and that's related still to supply chain. You hear about it in the real news, in the business news, and when you go to the grocery store. Chip shortage leaves U.S. companies dangerously low on semiconductors, according to a new U.S. survey of U.S. manufacturers and other companies that use semiconductors. They're down to less than 5 days of inventory for key chips. Eventually, we're going to talk about how important just-in-time was for the supply chain and just-in-sequence, if you know operations management at all. And for years, that was the way to go. But when there's major disruptions, you have a problem. Your stuff isn't where it needs to be. So in 2019, companies typically had 40 days of inventory for their key semiconductor chips. Now for the same chips, defined as 160 products that companies identified as being the most challenging to acquire, companies are operating with fewer than 5 days of inventory. Any glitch in the system, their production shuts down. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo said, survey results show the urgency for Congress to approve U.S. By the way, my paragraph comment up above is this is seeing marketing research as we go out and research primary data from manufacturers and supply chain issues. So the Commerce Secretary said the urgency for Congress to approve the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act, which includes $52 billion to boost domestic chip production. So potential impact of regulation and political and legal factors, one of the crest factors that we've thought about outside our firm that impacts our business and our consumers. On business and marketing. The report was based on a survey of companies, including materials and equipment manufacturers, semiconductor manufacturers, and automotive, industrial, and healthcare companies that need chips for their products. So here's the importance of research to get primary data on what's going on in the world around us. A disruption overseas, which might shut down a semiconductor plant for 2 to 3 weeks, has the potential to disable a manufacturing facility and furlough workers in the United States if that facility only has 3 to 5 days of inventory. So supply chain is important. President Biden has often highlighted the shortage of semiconductors in efforts to control supply chain problems and inflation. While the focus has largely been on the use in automobiles and resulting production slowdowns, the president has noted the use in a variety of products from refrigerators to hospital equipment, and production shortages affect marketing and consumers. That's the news blurb. I wanted to add to that the metaverse. We've heard of the metaverse. We know it's going to come at us. We know it's going to be immersive. We know it's going to require additional hardware and software and hardware updates. Who would this impact? Best Buy has a huge future ahead as people go to seek their expertise from the Geek Squad and upgrade their equipment. PC manufacturers who've seen a bit of a slump as people need more elaborate equipment in order to get involved in the metaverse are going to need more PCs out there, and guess what? Now, that's not tomorrow, but that's coming at us. If the supply chain problem in semiconductors doesn't get fixed, it's going to affect the manufacturers of PCs and indirectly poor companies like Best Buy. So marketers are influenced by all this. I did not know this. I know a lot, but there's a lot I don't know. If I had asked you before I put this up to tell me the number one coffee brand in the US, what might you have said? Would you have said Folgers? Yes. No. Yes. How many people would have said, yeah, Folgers, number one brand? Wow. 20%? How many? I don't know how people aren't playing. How many people wouldn't have said that? Okay, everybody else. So sometimes people just don't answer. I don't know what they're doing. So it turns out it is Folgers. So here we go. A new campaign for Folgers Coffee aims to perk up their stale reputation for the 172-year-old coffee brand by switching its focus from emotional benefits that have long been a part of its marketing story to the product itself, an asset that officials say have been neglected over the years. So here's the campaign theme. We're seeing ourselves repositioning the brand in the minds of the consumers away from just emotion. A 30-second spot kicking off the campaign begins in a grocery store coffee aisle where a woman examining the selection draws a quizzical look from a young couple. The Folgers jingle, the best part of waking up, plays faintly in the background. Let's see the ad, and then we'll continue with the story of what's happening. Oh, there's no sound there either. The long version. Okay, the short version was shorter. And so that is hardly the soft music of, you know, Folgers in your cup. This is a whole new repositioning for the audience. So the woman shoots back a defiant glance before emptying the Folgers shop, Folgers shelves into her shopping cart. And Joan Jett's punk album plays in the background. The ad then gallops through snippets that show the coffee in a wide range of its drinkers in their homes, businesses, including all these things. It allows us to reintroduce ourselves, proudly roasted in our hometown of New Orleans. So we are trying to do a specific thing with the consumer. We are trying to reposition the brand image in the consumer's mind so they don't think, oh, that's your grandfather's coffee. They think it's a coffee for people, young people, like you. So that's what they're working on doing, and later on we'll talk about consumer perception. According to Erica Roberts, the chief creative officer of the ad agency, the ad doesn't represent a comeback so much as a double click on elements of the brand its fans appreciate without necessarily having known that they appreciated it. So influencing consumers' brand perception. The campaign seeks new converts and reconsideration from those that may have left the franchise, so we're seeing a growth strategy. Although Folgers remains the top-selling U.S. coffee brand, my surprise, the influence of Starbucks and other specialty rivals in recent years have presented a challenge to these old legacy brands. For example, in 2020, Folgers produced sales in excess of $1 billion U.S. dollars, double that of its next closest rival, Starbucks. I didn't know that. So we see competition in the marketplace. The company's research indicated that consumers feel Folgers is not for me. Says the marketing officer over at Smucker's. In a competitive category that's dismissed the brand and labeled Folgers as their grandma's coffee, we're shaking things up by boldly choosing to overtly acknowledge any negative misperceptions and then loudly and proudly challenge them with Joan Jett, understanding the consumer and changing their perceptions. The campaign will be deployed across TV, online videos, and streaming audio channels and supported with a social media campaign that will involve influencers and a hashtag, damn right it's Folgers, that officials are confident will garner attention. Can't change consumers' mind if we don't get their attention. Media selection, social media, getting attention. J.M. Smucker Company, by the way, headquartered where? J.M. Smucker's?
Orville,
Ohio. Thank you. Orville, Ohio. Has been in charge of Folgers marketing for more than a dozen years, having paid $3 billion to buy from Procter & Gamble in 2008. Seattle Smuckers retail coffee brands, which include Cafe Bustelo and Dunkin' brands, rose 2% last year, in the first 6 months of fiscal 2022 to nearly $1.19 billion. That's a lot of coffee sales. So growth via acquisition a while ago and products in the mix. Finally, we can't get away from, my fault of course, Super Bowl. So Gillette is back in the Super Bowl for the first time in 16 years. Procter & Gamble's Gillette, Procter & Gamble headquartered where? Cincinnati, Ohio. Thank you for playing along with me, Ohio. Gillette will be back in the Super Bowl for the first time in 16 years with a 32nd spot in the second quarter of the NBA broadcast February 13th to back the launch of the Gillette Labs with exfoliating bar razor system. That's a mouthful. So we're reaching the target audience, and this is introduction of a new product, which we talk about later in the course. Gillette's last Super Bowl commercial, 2006, backed the launch of its then completely new system Fusion, a razor with five blades on the front and one on the back. Super Bowl campaign for Gillette Labs marks Gillette's biggest brand launch since Fusion. The spot focuses on the theme of the razor providing a quick and easy shave. It's intended to be product focused.
Gillette introduces the all-new Gillette Labs with exfoliating bar, a razor designed to give you a quick and easy shave. It combines shaving and gentle exfoliation into one efficient stroke. The bar in the handle removes unseen dirt and debris that gets in the way of the blades, giving you a shave as quick and easy as washing your face, so you can look like you put in an effort, effortlessly. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Sometimes when you get a new product introduction, you look at it and you say, what is that thing? I don't get what they're doing. Here, you pretty much understand what the thing is. You may decide you don't need it, but it's what you understand the product to be, and that was their intent. We're going non-celebrity, non-athlete, that was just an actor, to help keep focus on the product. So there's a campaign strategy. Miles from the site of the Super Bowl, Gillette will host a Gillette Labs roller skating experience in Santa Monica based on the idea that roller skating is a metaphor for how the razor provides shaving and exfoliating in one efficient stroke. So here's an event to promote the launch and creating a customer-consumer experience. So P&G does know a little bit about marketing consumer goods. So we pick up lecture notes page 51 and the middle of page 79 of the textbook, continuing with chapter 2, developing successful organizations and marketing strategies. Last time we were in the midst of, no, that's not right. Chapter 3. We're in chapter 3. I didn't update that. So maybe the pages are wrong too. We're in chapter 3, understanding external factors that influence the consumer and the organization. So my bad on that. But here we are in chapter 3. And so we were ending up talking about the post-war cohort. And the point I was going to get to, but didn't have time to get to because I ran out of time, was this thing called the Vermont County Store. And I forgot to bring in my catalogs from home where they mail us Vermont County Store catalogs. Highly successful marketers of nostalgic products, difficult to find, uses cohort images and memories to target various target segments to capture the attention of the post-war consumer. Cohort customers, it carries many older brands and even brings them back to life for those consumers. So they have a segment, they know who they are, they know what they want, they know the images that they want, the stuff that appeals to them.
A New England store is like a time machine. CBS This Morning contributor Lee Woodruff shows us how one store's loyal customers continue to indulge in the pleasures of a simpler and slower America. Its famous mail order catalog attracts customers from all around the world.
Weston, Vermont, population 600, is the unlikely home of one of the state's top tourist attractions.
135.
A third-generation family-owned country store that's in the business of selling nostalgia.
Bye. Bye.
What's your definition of a country store?
A country store was a place that you would go into in these small communities. 150 years ago, you didn't have the internet, and you would go to the country store to get just about anything that you needed.
In 1946, the Ortons started the Vermont Country Store catalog. And when the orders began rolling in, the Ortons opened a storefront. Almost 70 years later, the desire for hard-to-find, old-fashioned products is now a mega-million-dollar business. Customers of the Vermont Country Store keep coming back for their old favorites. And occasionally, their demand for a product has actually brought it back from extinction.
I think big sellers are usually ones that customers connect with. Products like our Kanji lipstick.
Product that went extinct.
It went extinct. It was no longer available. We started to work with a company to manufacture it.
The store and the catalog appeal to the young and the old. Another part of the country store's success? Tour buses.
I think history is a huge part of why people come to Vermont, and we have busloads of customers that come from England, and Vermont is really, feels to them like old America.
It's so cute.
The store proudly resists any urge to update its clothing to fit current trends.
And this is one of your best sellers.
One of the best. Yeah. It's enduring. It's a timeless product.
Nothing says chaste and pure like a lipstick gown, right? Like
house-made creams, lotions, and tonics fill the shelves of the store's remedy section.
There's some really cool, bizarre, old-fashioned remedies for things that you don't think about so much anymore. Yeah. Bunion corrector, right?
Yes.
So in this era of Amazon and the internet where you can touch a button and get everything, what do you think it is about the Vermont Country Store that just keeps people coming back?
Feel a time-honored tradition that's there, almost a smell and a feeling that it's been here forever, and that no matter what you need, you can find it here.
A tradition that the Orton brothers aren't about to change. For CBS This Morning, Lee Woodruff, Weston, Vermont.
So the smells, the visual, the flannel, whatever, might not have meaning to you, but to that cohort, it brings back memories of, nostalgic memories of their past, and they were interested in it. So Amazon shoppers probably are not that excited about the Vermont Country Store, but this cohort group does indeed like it. So. There we go. Leading edge baby boomer cohort, born 46 to 55, age is 67 to 76 currently. This group remembers the assassination, what influenced them when they grew up, the assassination of John and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. It was the loss of JFK that first shaped this cohort's values, and they were catalyzed by opposition to the Vietnam War. Leading edge boomers are very aware of their cohort grouping. They're very self-assured, self-centered. Here we see the hippies of this time period when they were young. They championed causes with fervor because they were sure of being right. Greenpeace, civil rights, women's lib were all, and they were equally justified in being hedonistic and self-indulgent. Pot, free love, sensuality. Of course, they never inhaled pot. It was more like a figure thing later. This is their life. There's marketing to the boomers down there. Because of their position following the birth dearth of the Depression years, they had, and until recently, continued to have an influence on society disproportionate to their numbers. They were that big bubble moving through the snake we talked about. If there's one thing that boomers universally hate, it's being considered old. Anybody know someone of that age group? And they don't want to be told they're old? Does that resonate at all? They still see themselves as being young and vital. They're old, but they don't want to be told they're old. In a society that largely ignores or coddles its seniors, they have an intense desire to remain young, relevant, and useful. Any reference to their age or limitations will be an instant turnoff. Appeal to them with language that alludes to the advantages of being established, not old, the opportunities of retirement and beyond, and the authority that comes with seniority. People say you can't what at your age?
People think you can't do things after a certain age or at a certain age. Prove them wrong by just doing it. I ran an ultramarathon when I was 51.
We run an online business together.
It doesn't matter your age, it matters how much energy you put into something.
I'm 28 years old and I'm running for office.
I got a tattoo at the age of 51. Makes me feel like a rock star. It's about how you feel and your outlook on life. It doesn't matter how old you are.
Don't be ageist, says AARP, but they're really talking to those folks that are of a certain age. A company that really succeeds at digital marketing to baby boomers is AARP. Its AARP possibilities page uses legible fonts, attractive celebrities, and positive, buoyant language about life after 60. Consider this a model for attracting and keeping this advanced audience. The leading edge baby boomers, yes, 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 we said that. So here's the Facebook page for AARP. It has this idea of that target audience in mind. Okay, so there are ways to appeal to the folks without necessarily calling them old. Are you stressed? Do you want to accomplish things still in your life? Trailing edge baby boomer cohort, 56 to 64 and ages 58 to 66 this year. This group witnessed the fall of Vietnam, Watergate, Nixon's resignation, the oil embargo, raging inflation rates, speaking of which, and more than 30% decline in the S&P index led these individuals to be far less optimistic about their financial future than were the leading edge baby boomers, who they felt got bigger opportunities and jobs and houses and investments. Baby boomer grandparents overall are healthy, active, educated, and endowed with sizable nest eggs. Spending by grandparents on their grandchildren is on the rise. Grandkids Matter is a site that recognizes this target market and dedicates itself to validate and empower grandparents as they bond with future generations in meaningful ways and leaving a lasting positive legacy. How do you, as a boomer, relate to your grandchildren? What can you talk to them about? What can you share with them? What sort of experiences can you have? What sort of products can you buy? Here's some from Grandkids Matter. Here's five great activities for grandparents and grandchildren, and a variety of other ideas for you to think about as a grandparent. And of course, product placement is going to be there as well. Gen X, born 65 to 80, age 42 to 57 in 2022, the latchkey kids of the 80s, have received the most negative publicity, perhaps because many have seen firsthand the trauma of divorce. This cohort has delayed marriage and children, and they don't take those commitments lightly. Gen Xers have been labeled as baby busters, latchkey kids, slackers. Anybody remember seeing the movie Back to the Future? And the principal, or I guess the teacher in the class is always yelling at Marty and these guys, "You're a slacker!" This is the idea of this generation. The Why Me generation, the new lost generation for babies. Despite a rocky start into adulthood, this group shows a spirit of entrepreneurship unmatched by any other cohort, which by now is played out in, we are the College of Business and Entrepreneurship. We have entrepreneurship programs. Take a look at many internet startups and you'll find successful Gen Xers who, quote, did it their way as entrepreneurs. More than any other group, this cohort accepts cultural diversity and puts quality of life, personal life ahead of work, which made old white men like me, who were business HR people and managers, crazy. I got a promotion for you. You're going to love this job. It's going to take you to Minnesota. And you say, I don't want to go to Minnesota. I'll just stay here. Wait a minute. We weren't used to that in corporate America. This generation starts that. And right now, I think there's that continuation among a certain subset of, my personal life is important too. I'm not just going anywhere because I can get a promotion. Thank you. Plays out in different ways for the cohorts. How do you reach Gen Xers? Well, it's complicated. Many Gen Xers rely on traditional media. 62% read newspapers, 48% listen to the radio, 85% have favorite television shows. For Gen X, email is considered the gold standard for personal communications as well as business. Digital video is also huge among Gen X. It's even more popular than social networking. Over 75% download or stream video online at least once a month. Your digital marketing strategy, dear marketer, has to be on point to reach skeptical Gen Xers. As kids, they were often the children of divorce who came home to empty houses. These experiences made them into independent, resourceful, and family-oriented adults. Something to keep in mind if you're marketing to this group. Gen Y, born 81 to 96, age 26 to 41. Older brothers and sisters in this. Yeah, like this. They're also known as Gen Y. Their core value structure seems to be quite different from that of Gen X. In 2015, the millennial generation, Gen Y, surpassed the baby boomer generation as the nation's largest living generation. They're more digitally connected than any other generation before them. They're more idealistic and team-oriented without the cynical, what's in it for me, free agent mindset of many Gen Xers. 91% say they preferred shopping in drugstores. I'm pretty sure this was before the pandemic. 68% prefer shopping in consumer electronics stores, 80% shopping in apparel stores, 84% prefer shopping in department stores, 83% prefer shopping in discount or mass merchandising stores. So there's their mindset pre-pandemic. So as of 2020, millennial spending in the US was $2.5 trillion, representing 30% of total retail sales. That's a lot of money in the hands of these people from a retail viewpoint. The millennial generation, Gen Y, trusts word of mouth buzz more than they do customary marketing, advertising channels of information. So if you're a marketer with a focus on these people, you need to make your reviews a large feature of your service or product page to leverage the millennials' need to conduct independent research and find testimonials from unbiased sources. Encourage your customers to submit user-generated content through contests or discounts. My wife, who likes to travel the world, when I say the world, I must mean France, is not of this generation. She's a bit older, but she was looking at a new site to rent an apartment in Paris, and she liked the place a lot, but the place had no reviews, no customer reviews yet. I think it was a new place, but who knows? She moved on to another site, to another place. She trusts these reviews, as she should, right? As long as they're honest reviews, it's important to get these on your site. Gen Y experiences Gen Y values experiences over possessions. So, for example, Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines presented passengers with virtual balconies, a video of a real-time stream of the ocean in their cabins.
Wayfair has everything you need to make your home ready to seize the day.
Virtual balcony staterooms, as the name implies, these interior rooms offer the unique feature of a high-definition screen that simulates an ocean-facing balcony complete with ever-changing view.
So they want the experience. They may not be able to want to pay for the outside cabin. Get an ocean view from your inside cabin, the experience. Millennials are at the forefront of the experience economy and escape room games. How many of you guys been to an escape room? How many of you guys actually escaped from the escape room? Not everybody. We sometimes do, sometimes don't. And escape room games appeal to them as the experience. I mean, what are you buying there? The experience. It's not product. So this is Don Cossack. We'll see if he pops up when I click on him. Talking about how, I think, AT&T as well as his company, Time Warner, didn't catch on to some of these changes in technology with the generation. Does he work? No one's working for me.
So what we've done, we've taken residential, moved it over to the enterprise side. You know, again, my history, AT&T, 5 years ago, we didn't even know the cable companies existed, okay? In fact, AT&T tried to get into, it was Ameritech, SBC. We're in the cable business slightly. It was decided not a core competency. We moved out, okay? Guess what? They're trying to get back in because cable companies now are taking residential telephone lines. And as the new generation, you know, they don't even go with landlines.
So AT&T didn't pay attention to the cable business. Cable companies then turned around and started taking residential phone business. And today's new generation don't have landlines at all. How many of your parents still have a landline, do have a landline? Maybe almost half, 40%? How many of you guys don't have a landline? Almost everybody, right? Landlines, I still like a landline. I'm an old guy. I like that confidence, you know, your wireless could go out or something, who knows the tower, but my landline is reliable. It's another $44 a month. Why am I wasting my money? We hardly ever use it for anything, but what if I need it? AT&T heard about it and then chose to ignore this technology change coming at them and lost out a bit with the opportunity to jump on younger folks. Gen Z, born 97 to 2012, and age 10 to 25 in 2022. Anybody know people in that age group? Thank you. The new silent generation or homelander generation are the people that are reaching adulthood in the 2010s and who will enter the workforce in 2015 to 2025. This group of people are generally thought to be, quote, realistic. They became very familiar with computers, cell phones, iPods, and video games at a much earlier age than generations late Y and all of X, leading to the most of Gen Z preferring a more connected and LCD screen lifestyle. And I know you all have heard stories about people in your cohort group that sleep with their phones, can't be too away from their phones, get anxiety if their phone's in another room from them. That's not you, of course, other people. They are a connected group. They're usually raised by leading edge baby boomer or Generation X, and sometimes have brothers and sisters of Generation Y and Z. Their parents are the soccer moms and helicopter parents, if you've heard of those terms. Gen Z calls their own shots. They refuse to be dictated to, whether it be by a clothing brand, a television network, or a website. In essence, they're creating their own experiences from fashion to entertainment to communication. They understand how scary the world can be. It was scary before the pandemic. Having grown up post 9/11 in the wake of the Great Recession and amid countless reports of school violence, they've seen the effects of the economy firsthand and are more aware of troubling times. Their role models are young everyday characters like the Hunger Games, Katniss Everdeen. When I ask the question, people don't raise their hand, but I like Katniss. How many people know and like Katniss Everdeen, Ed? Sort of, quite a few. All right, that's cool. Who face seemingly inescapable scenarios, but rise above them to create a better society, which is sort of felt to be a cohort group feeling for y'all. In these stories, relatable characters who are empowered to defeat their circumstances, just like the Z's, who feel a responsibility to change the status quo. So Target creates a new brand for Gen Zers. Will you work for me? You won't work either. Everybody worked when I tried them. I tell you truly, they did. I tried them before I came here. I know you don't believe me or don't care. What am I looking at? JCPenney. Oh, Target. Thank you. Is Target showing up? No. What the heck? I will have to, now that I remember to record, I'm going to have to do better with this, I guess. I don't understand what's happening. Gen Z Rebels with a Cause? No, that's a PDF file. Well, we'll have to kill the PDF, and then you have to trust me that what this was, I'll try to put it in post-production. But this was Target creating a new brand for Gen Z. Trust me, they did that. I'll try to put it in later. So this is just a bit of a comparison between millennials and Gen Z when they first appeared. The nicknames, NetGen, MeGen versus iGen, millennials on steroids, Snapchat generation. Role models, either you do or don't agree to those, but Lian Durham, Kanye, Michael Phelps versus this. Stereotypes you're sick of hearing, the big events in their life, Justin Bieber arrest, never heard of, this is being a little cute, but floppy disks or flip phones, which of course have come back. You guys seen the new flip phones? What goes away comes back, and the U.S. population, 80 million millennials, 65 million Gen Zs. More information on what they are and who they are. My not very funny joke about no wonder people don't like my long lectures at an hour and 15 minutes is because they say Gen Z has an attention span of 5 seconds. Take it with a grain of salt. So that's about the two of them. Now, how do these guys face crises differently? Millennials and Gen Z face the same crises with different outlooks. Both have been impacted by a series of once-in-a-lifetime crises in their formative years. The dot-com meltdown, 9/11, the Great Recession, the coronavirus global pandemic. But their reactions differ. Millennials are more concerned in this environment about the pandemic. 84% of millennials said they were somewhat or very concerned about COVID-19 pandemic compared to only, in quotes, 78% of Gen Z. Millennials say they'll be slower to return to the mall. 73% of millennial consumers say it may take them some time before they feel comfortable shopping again in a mall, while 62% of Gen Z shoppers agree, so significantly less than their older counterparts. Millennials are also feeling significantly more anxious than Gen Z about the prospect of states reopening, 41% versus 29%. They also feel notably more scared, vulnerable, unprepared, panicked. Gen Z is showing more of an eagerness to get back into a regular shopping routine, especially for apparel and beauty personal care products, 71%, and entertainment items, while millennials are more focused on shopping for baby products, 28%. So just differences depending on your age group, depending on your cohort. When stores reopen, 37% of Gen Z shoppers will have a stronger preference for clothes shopping in physical stores, significantly higher than those that will have a stronger preference for shopping online. That compares to millennials, who said once pandemic passes, they'll have a stronger preference for shopping for clothes online versus in-store. The point of all this is it's important to understand the differences in your generational cohort responses, if they're your segment, and what these mean for your brand. Newest generation, again, I told you we ran through the alphabet through Gen Z, and so now we're rotating around to Gen Alpha. Born 2013 through 2025, yeah, I guess that makes sense. And age newborn to 9 in 2022 promises to be the most highly educated, diverse, and technologically proficient generation to live so far. They may never have landline phones or checkbooks. Electronic tablets are replacing teddy bears in their cribs at night, and they will likely text their playmates instead of passing notes. They're expected to be socially and ecologically conscious, thanks to their millennial parents who aren't just willing to settle for rock-bottom prices despite their frugal ways. They're interested in green products, sustainability. Research shows millennials are willing to pay a premium for products made by companies that they see as being authentic and espousing these values, including sustainability, a big topic among consumers and businesses today. For now, Gen Alphas are still babies and toddlers. That means their parents will be making most of their buying decisions for at least the next decade. Their moms will be the parent calling the spending shots. Later on, we'll talk about family decision making and the importance that the roles of different parents play. Today, women currently make or influence as much as 85% of purchasing decisions and buy over 50% of traditionally male products, such as cars, home improvement products, and consumer electronics. So, not surprisingly, millennial moms control the majority of buying decisions in the family and for those Gen Alpha kids. To reach Generation Alpha parents, you need to be authentic. They want real from you. Personalize your products. Embrace and promote social responsibility. And when I say embrace it, I mean be serious about it. Don't just make what's called greenwashing. Don't fake it. Really believe it. Really do it. Don't ignore the kids, of course, though they're still young. Research shows that children often wield a great deal of influence in the grocery aisle. Although some stores have stopped doing this, when you go to the checkout counter, what's just at this height in the checkout counter aisle? The candy. And where do the kids sit in the grocery shopping cart? Yeah, so it's there for the, of course, sometimes it appeals to me. I need to grab one of those things on impulse too, but to the kids as well. When accompanying their parents on shopping trips, they make demands that influence nearly 80% of shopping decisions, not just for candy, but for cereals and cakes and snacks and drinks, etc. Another social force is the marital status of the population, or the marital status of your particular cohort that you're focused on, your target market. Are they never married? They have particular needs, wants, and desires, and ways to spend their disposable income that is different from people who are married, that's different from those who are separated or divorced, that are different from those that are widowed. We'll talk about the family life cycle later on in life. The U.S. Census Bureau keeps track of things like how people are living. So cohabitation, we know that more and more. You know, in the 1950s, your son did not move in with his girlfriend and live with her outside of marriage. It wasn't a thing. How many of you guys either are or know people who are living together outside of marriage? It's everywhere, right? Cohort shift, attitudes shift, norm shift, right? What about your particular target audience? How do they feel about cohabitation? It's become increasingly accepted by a broad swath of social and demographic groups. What about blended families? Again, 1950s was a time of I don't know what I'm thinking about here. Happy days, maybe they were later than 1950s. Families living together in social groups where people stayed together. Then we get people like, what was it? What was the TV show where the two families merged together? The Brady Bunch, okay? Suddenly that became a thing, way different than what we used to see. So now we have blended families. What does that mean? What are the characteristics of your target audience? Are they a new family, a divorced family, a blended family, which has different needs, wants, and desires, right? And how are these things changing over time? In terms of social forces, we have the idea of racial and ethnic diversity. This was as of the 2020 census, which they only update every 10 years. Hispanic or Latino population grew from 50.5 million, about 16% of the population, to 62.1%, 62.1 million, 18% in 2020. Between 2010 and 2020, Hispanic and Latino population grew by 23%. Sounds like a growing market to me. Maybe there's something there for you. Slightly more than half of the total U.S. population growth between 2010 and 2020 came from growth in the Hispanic or Latino population. Maybe that's something we should be tracking on. What are the needs, wants, desires, tastes? Do they speak, do they want Spanish on their ads, or are they more Americanized? What do they want? African American population grew by 88.7% since 2010. In 2020, the black or African American population, 41.1 million, accounted for 12% of all people living in the United States, compared with 38.9 million and 12.6% in 2010. Coupled with the 5.8 million respondents who identified as black or African American in combination with another racial group, such as white or American Indian and Alaska Native, the black or African American alone or in combination population totaled 46.9 million people, about 14.2% of the total population. While black or African American alone population grew 5.6% since 2010, the black or African American in combination population grew 88.7%. Are they in your target audience? Do they have needs, wants, and desires that make them different than other people within the general population? When it comes to coffee, I bet many African Americans drink the same thing as many Caucasians. When it comes to makeup, many African Americans have different skin tones than many Caucasians. That might be something that's different. Hair products, perhaps tastes in fashion differ. What's it mean for you? So, do we miss opportunities because we don't fully understand the various segments? Well, yeah. Yes, African Americans drink bourbon. You'd never know it from the marketing. Groups like Black Bourbon Society have formed to share an appreciation of the whiskey, and distillers are finally starting to pay attention. The growth is coming from multicultural, says the head of multicultural marketing for Diageo, the British spirits company that produces bourbon brands like Bulleit and I.W. Harper. For our brands to be sustained in the future, we absolutely have to start with a multicultural lens. For many black bourbon drinkers, the change isn't coming fast enough. They say that most brands, when they do reach out, still pigeonhole African-American consumers with the outdated playbooks aimed at the urban demographic, which is industry speak for lower income, younger black consumers who supposedly gravitate towards sweeter spirits like cognac and flavored whiskey. Don't promote to me with honey flavored or some hip hop star, says Jamar Mack, 36, an African-American bourbon fan in Louisiana. My race is not my palate. So you have to be careful as you approach these other segments, whether it's racial or age category or gender, to understand their needs, their wants, and desires relative to your product. You miss out or you misrepresent to them. The Black Lives Matter movement reflects the intersection of systematic inequities and the impact of COVID-19 in terms of health and economic impacts. The protests involving millions of people across the U.S. and outside of it, affecting global businesses, emphasizing the need for corporate social responsibility, sustainability, social responsibility marketing. The world's best known brands have used their marketing channels to offer support. To be silent is to be complicit. Black Lives Matter, says Netflix on Twitter. We have a platform, we have a duty to our black members, employees, creators, and talent to speak up. Similar tweets have come from Disney-owned Fox and Hulu. Apple Music joined the Blackout Tuesday campaign to raise awareness about issues of systematic ethnic inequity. Nike repurposed its famous slogan with its "for once, don't do it" advertisement. Don't sit back, don't sit up, don't put up with it. You can be part of the change. Nike reflecting the social changes in the environment with their brand and marketing to their consumers. Consumers are apparently holding brands more accountable for their actions, which in turn is causing brands which tend to deviate from politicization to break their silence. But how much of it is genuine and how much of it is just saving face? So brands responding to consumers, but are they serious? Are they embracing it? Or are they just doing it to do it? Several brands have been opening up their purses and shelling out thousands for legal defense and bailout funds. Beauty company Glossier, for example, is donating $500,000 to six organizations and $500,000 in the form of grants to black-owned beauty businesses. Many of the brands that have made significant monetary donations or have offered solutions through purposeful social initiatives are taking steps to correct problematic past social responsibility in marketing. Target may be providing support for its 200 misplaced Minneapolis employees and is promising to invest more in the city's black and brown communities, but that doesn't erase its history of racism at its home base. Uber spent up to $500 million on an apology campaign in 2018 to scrub its tarnished reputation. Grievances against the carpool company included allegations of racial discrimination by the company's former HR head. Dealing with these issues can be difficult for marketers to figure out, but necessary because their consumers demand it. Though imperfect, at least these brands are putting money where their mouths are instead of merely performing authenticity. Here are the brands offering up more than just words to support Black Lives Matter, so brands are giving back. Asian community. Approximately 19.9 million people, 6% of all respondents, identified as Asian alone, only, just Asian, in 2020, up from 14.7 million, or 4.8% in 2010, coupled with the 4.1 million respondents who identify Asian in combination with another race, such as white, Native Hawaiian, or other Pacific Islander, the Asian alone or in combination population comprised 24 million people, 7.2% of the population. The Asian alone population grew by 35% between 2010 and 2020. In comparison, the Asian in combination population grew by 55.5%, another potential target market. Something we don't often think about as a marketing opportunity, American Indians and Alaska Natives. From 2010 to 2020, they grew in combination by 160%. In 2020, American Indian and Alaska Native population, 3.7 million, accounted for 1.1% of all people in the U.S., compared with 0.9% in 2010. An additional 5.9 million identified as American Indian and Alaska Native, with another race group in 2020. Skipping through it, the American Indian Alaska Native alone population grew by 27%. So, do we ever pay attention to this group? Well, of all companies, Nike actually has developed a shoe for this particular market segment. Why? Why would their needs, wants, and desires be different and worthy of additional effort? The Nike Swoosh flies again. N7 program is giving native golfers a lift. Anybody know anything about the American Indian culture and know what the N7 would refer to, or the seven generations? It's a somewhat, you know, cultural specific thing to this segment, as I understand it, not being a Native American. It's that we should pay attention in our generation to the three generations before us, our ancestors, and the three generations ahead of us, our future, sustainability, treating nature right, as well as our own generation. So the N7 refers, as I understand it, to the seven generations that they should be, as a people, paying attention to. The Winged Nike is once again swooshing over Indian country in the form of new Nike N7 shoes, the latest version of the shoe designed specifically for American Indians as a way of promoting physical fitness. The original Air Native N7 was designed in 2007 with a larger fit for indigenous feet, as well as a culturally specific look. This is the first time Nike's designed a shoe for specific race or ethnicity. This one's wider at the toe with a thicker sock liner for comfort and fewer seams to cut down on irritation. The Nike N7 golf shoe is aimed at those natives who tee up and aim for the green. There are white people in the U.S. too. So the white population, over 235 million people, reported white alone or in combination with another group. It accounted for 61.6% of all people living in the U.S. And let me skip down a little bit because it's all on the sign there. White in combination with population saw a 360% increase during the same period. The changes are likely due to the improvements in the census data. It seems odd that we would have such a huge growth period, so that's a little side note. But obviously, that's a segment that might offer some opportunities for you. So what are some other changes we've seen? Well, we've actually begun to think about some changes in our culture over time, right? So sustainable marketing has become a more important thing in the minds of consumers. Are you thinking about it as a marketer, as a business? Healthy living is a thing. We're coming out with, I don't know how healthy truly a, what I say, zero carb beer is, but still, it's in that genre. The hashtag MeToo movement, LGBT, and I think I missed some letter, rights, the do-it-yourself and maker culture. Home Depot and Lowe's are doing fine for themselves as people go out and do it themselves. Adventurers, how many people have been kayaking? Is that a thing you do? Yeah. How many people have a kayak? A couple of people do. So obviously you're into a bit of adventure, right? Cocooning, stay at home with more creature comforts, home networks, home theaters. Anybody, any of your folks have a home theater? Not a big thing for cocooning here, all right. Patriotism, anti-racism. All these things are social changes impacting consumers and businesses have to pay attention to. And skirts for men. Men's linen skirt in Hakama style, unisex, organic, eco-sustainable clothing. Ethical means linen skirts. Guys, how many of you guys are wearing skirts these days? Webbies, skirts, are you in a skirt there, sir? No? Is this a social change? How many fashion students? Is this a social change that you should be paying attention to? Are you designing skirts for men? Maybe not for this audience, though. So who is this segment of the population? How much will it catch on? How quickly will it catch on? Probably, how does grunge band stuff? 30 years, I don't know. We were talking about guys in grunge bands wearing blue jean skirts. And the question 30 years ago, was this going to catch on? So far, not. Some social norms are harder to change over time than others. The economy, so economic factors, right? These are factors relating to income, expenditures, and resources that affect the cost of running a business and a household. We think about the macro, how many of you guys have had macro already? Macroeconomic conditions that are affecting us. And right now, of course, we have things like inflation and stimulus checks that are or are not coming at us and global trade, macro factors that are out there. How's that? What's that mean for your business? What's it mean for your consumers? What's it mean for your marketing? What about consumer income? How is it working for them right now? How is it going to work as we get out of the pandemic? What's the gross income, the amount of they're earning each year? How's it differing? How's it changing? Disposable income after taxes, discretionary income after they buy necessities. What is this recession going to mean to your consumers? What is this inflation going to mean to your consumers as the cost of necessities go up 5%, 6%, 7%? Over what it was last year. So great, you got a 3% raise, wow. But the cost of goods have gone up 7%. What's it gonna mean? How's it gonna play out? A notion of combining a bit of demographics and a bit of economics comes to us in the form of this ESRI community data. You can identify the top three neighborhood lifestyles to better serve your customers. ESRI's Community Tapestry Segmentation System classifies each U.S. zip code based on socioeconomic and demographic characteristics to create 65 distinct market segments with 14 life mode groups and 6 urbanization groups. The idea here is, you've heard the expression, birds of a feather flock together. Obviously, not everyone in a particular neighborhood is identical. But in your mind's eye, can you see a difference between the folks that live at Beechwood, Hudson, Stowe, Ravenna, Kent? Do you sort of picture there being differences there, yeah? Differences what? And obviously there are variations within the neighborhoods, that's not the point, but there are differences in terms of socioeconomic status and cultural values. And what the people watch on TV, what cars they drive, what shows they go to, etc. So this is an entity that helps marketers to work these things out and to think about it. Let's see if anything's working for me today. So this is their site where they talk about what's going on, data you can trust, accuracy, updates, software, data responses to COVID-19, thinking about how this data can better help you to understand the socioeconomic characteristics of a neighborhood you might market to. We'll return to this idea later on.
Today was report card day for the auto industry, and it was a good one. Sales surged in December, capping a fifth straight year of growth for car makers. Analysts expect final sales for the year to exceed 17 million, a figure that hasn't been reached in more than a decade. Cheap gas helped boost sales of trucks and SUVs and luxury vehicles. Today, the price of oil briefly tumbled below $50 a barrel.
Before the bottom fell out of the economy, the car companies, especially ones from Detroit, were addicted to the sales of big trucks and SUVs. When gas prices skyrocketed, the companies nearly lost it all. Well, now we have crazy low gas prices, and consumers are gobbling up SUVs. Jeep, for example, was one of the biggest winners as consumers picked crossover SUVs. Its sales were up more than 40% for the year. At the same time, hybrid sales and alternative vehicle sales took a hit in 2014. Even though some of the hunger for bigger cars has picked up, maybe Detroit executives have learned a lesson from their near-death experience, and they haven't forgotten yet.
What you cleared out of the system in the last 4 or 5 years was 40 or 50 years of accumulated, perhaps bad behavior.
Painter says even though bigger vehicles are more profitable, today's cars, no matter the size, are far more fuel efficient. Stephanie Brindley with IHS Automotive says this 17 million is much healthier than the last time the industry hit 17 million cars a year. She says the industry has learned a very basic economic lesson.
The automakers in general have shifted to adjusting production for demand overall. So what will happen now is that if an auto manufacturer is seeing a vehicle not performing to expectations, they can adjust the number of vehicles that they produce.
So if gas skyrockets, then she says car makers can in theory shift from making big SUVs to making small cars. Meanwhile, Michelle Krebs with Autotrader.com says consumers only save a few hundred dollars because gas is cheaper. That's not enough to send them into the dealership.
People keep focusing a lot on just gas prices, but that's not the full picture. There's a big economic picture at play here as well.
Krebs says the health of the auto industry comes not as much from cheap gas as from an improving unemployment rate, improving consumer confidence, low interest rates, and
credit was widely available, and we saw a big increase in leasing. So that made vehicles available to more people on a wider spectrum of creditworthiness.
Krebs says the business model for car makers has changed in the last decade. Car makers can turn a profit selling far fewer cars. Krebs says she expects consumers and car companies to enjoy the cheap gas while it lasts. Sonari Glenton, NPR News.
I fully recognize this is an old example, and the point isn't about what was happening per se, but rather the overall message. If we were to ask naive students what drives demand for cars, one answer might indeed be price of gas. And what are we saying here? Well, that's one factor, but it's not that simple, and you have to understand it's more, the crest factors are more complicated. It's other economic factors like unemployment rates, consumer confidence. By the way, consumer confidence is not strong right now. Gas prices are not low right now. Low interest rates and credit availability. Also, it strikes me as stunningly market 101 that you have to adjust your production for consumer demand. And yet for a long time, car companies just didn't do that. In part because it's hard to do that, to switch over, but in part because they just didn't care to do what the consumers wanted. Basic marketing at work here for these car companies, and hopefully is a lesson for you as well. What's going on with the crest factors? It's more complicated than just one thing. And how can you adjust whatever it is you're selling, fashion, technology, cars, to consumer demand?
Yeah.
This is Felber and Felber, B2B services, talking about an economic influence on his business.
The economic slowdowns, we've been through several of them. This particular one, as it hits raw materials and fuel costs and petroleum-based products, is hitting everywhere, and it's hitting a little faster. The larger clients that we work with are getting ahead of the curve. Some are feeling the pinch right away. Others are anticipating feeling the pinch. So what can we learn as a small business from this? A, it's affecting our clients. It affects us. It may affect us a little more dramatically down the road, but what we're trying to do is find ways to help them. And this may mean that the current services we're providing them now might need to be put on hold, and we may need to address other things that we can help them in the immediate need. For example, if they're really pushing for sales and we're working on public relations and public relations is generating leads, but sales doesn't have literature to fulfill, maybe we need to focus our attitudes. And that's happened in some clients where we really need to hone down what do they need right now in this particular setting. So adjusting to our clients' needs is important. And what we're learning is that our job is going to be to have some more foresight on the next slowdown or the next major turn, whatever that event may be, and try to anticipate what our clients are going to go through. That's what will add value down the road for our clients.
So in a B2B world of marketing, it's not that the economy is impacting you directly. It's that your clients are impacted by what's going on in the economy. You have to, of course, forecast those changes that are affecting your clients, because it's going to affect your business, and adapt appropriately to whatever it is that they need to help them out, and to learn to be better about tracking that environment and knowing what's going to, planning for the changes that are coming down the road. So whether we're talking about marketing cars or consultancy to businesses, the crush factors, economic factors are important. Technological forces impact us in a variety of ways, of course. They impact consumer choices. They impact our view of value. Technological changes means that we have reduced costs in a lot of things. So instead of focusing on, I overuse this example, I don't think I've used it at all yet in this particular lecture series. When flat screen TVs first came out, they were $20,000, $15,000, $10,000. I bought my first flat screen TV at $3,000 and it was a steal. How much is a flat screen TV today? 500, 400, you could probably, even cheaper, right? So price used to be a really big focus. Yeah. Now it's not such a big deal. We focus on other things within the product. It influences the introduction of new products. Who knows what the metaverse is gonna produce for us in terms of new products coming out. It changes to production, so technology helps us to do recycling better, to be more sustainable. So our consumers may want us to do that as well. Obviously, the entire market space, e-commerce, was created by and continues to be driven by technology. So market space and information and communication-based electronic exchange system, where physical boundaries no longer interfere with buy-sell decisions, which you're very familiar with. But again, think back to before this was all a big thing. So you were in Iowa. How in the world were you going to reach the market? How are we going to let people know about you? How are we going to get products advertised, shipped, etc.? No longer a problem. Technology has helped us out. There are many industry-specific market spaces. We're an integration of marketplaces through sophisticated computer and telecommunication technologies. In a market space, information and or physical goods are exchanged, and transactions take place through computers and networks, what you know as e-commerce, right? So electronic commerce, the intranet, extranets, an extension of an organization's internal technology that allows the company to extend its system to users outside the organization, usually its business partners, its vendors, its suppliers, in isolation from all other internet users, as long as they don't get hacked, to share important information on inventories and products, etc. For retail, e-commerce is arguably the most significant retail digital transformation ever, caused by COVID-19. Rushed things along in huge numbers. COVID-19 has forced retailers to invest more money into new technologies and implement those technologies much more quickly than they would have otherwise. and retailers that had not yet even started to sell online have quickly transformed their businesses or gone out of business because people weren't coming to their stores. Coronavirus accelerated e-commerce growth trends significantly. U.S. e-commerce penetration jumped to more than 25% in April 2020 from only 15% at the end of 2019, pulling that idea forward e-commerce several years. And just a graphic, digital channels used for the first time due to COVID-19 by respondents, live chat, interactive voice video, voice, in-app chat, etc. So some of these things are widely used. Some of the things are being used the first time. Why? The impact of an external force on our consumers and on what they do. I have a cute little video coming up, but I only have 2 minutes, and it probably takes more than that to do it. So let's end today 2 minutes early by my clock. And if there is a snow out on Thursday, watch for me online. Stay safe, stay warm. See you next time.